This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hi, Jason Gibbs, Joy Production Manager. It's Radiothon time. We still need Joy and we need your support. If you appreciate our free podcast service, our voice for the LGBTI community globally, and the volunteers that make our service possible, please sign up, renew your Joy membership, or make a tax-deductible donation before June 30 to keep our service possible. You may win a prize. Head to joy.org.au and click on either the Become a Member or Donate tabs to support us. If you appreciate our podcast service, let us know in the comments section when making your donation. Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them, at joy.org.au and on iTunes. Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
We've now got in the studio Gabrielle Williams, who's the Parliamentary Secretary for Health and the Member for Dandenong, and Rebecca...
Dominguez,
thank you.
Dominguez.
That's how you say it, Dominguez. Yes. Dominguez, who is the president of BiAlliance, but also the current co-chair.
Acting co-chair. While Ruth McNair is on long service leave. Lucky her.
There you go.
Actually, where she is. I wonder where she was.
Actually, it was Ruth who actually contacted me and said, can we come on your show? I said, of course you can. So what we want to talk about is health and LGBTI health. And I'm going to kick off the conversation by saying many years ago I was involved in helping to set up the very first ministerial advisory committee on what was then called gay and lesbian health. I think the language has changed since then, which is absolutely quite right. Mm. And as I was talking to one of my former colleagues from that committee, they said, are they still going? Haven't they finished? Haven't they actually completed their work? So what's your response to that?
I think my response to that would be that LGBTI people experience poorer health outcomes in other communities in Victoria and in Australia, and as long as that is the case, then our work is not done.
That's a great response.
But is that your work, or is that symptomatic of the real problem, and that is that policy work done centrally hasn't percolated yet? Is that part of the problem, that health services at all levels, from community services through primary care right up to acute care, haven't picked up the ball enough in terms of engaging with LGBTI communities, or is something else going on?
I think that's definitely part of it, and I think a large focus of the work that we've been undertaking is to better engage mainstream health services to ensure that they are responsive to the needs of the LGBTI communities.
Look, I did say, Terry, just to respond also to your question, I sit on the board of two health services, an acute health service and a community health service. And even at the board level, LGBTI health issues percolate.
Okay, I'll give you another example then and see what people think.
And that's not because I think I'm a gay
just
man
about,
or I'm sensitive to it.
Just
I think
about
it's because
every discretionary dollar the Commonwealth Government now has to spend in primary health care is being channeled through some things called primary health networks. Not your fee-for-service Medicare stuff, but every other dollar the Commonwealth Government ploughs in. That looks after diabetes services, that looks after headspace services, that looks after some of the what we would have called mental health psychosocial support services. Does anyone know whether the boards of primary health networks are adopting the sort of policies that in this state apply to every other public health service or not? And we wouldn't know. It would be my argument.
Look, as I said, I think that there's definitely a growing focus, certainly by this government, on inclusion, on diversity. I think it's been a mantra of ours since we first came to government in 2014. But I'd also think a lot of the work that's been generated out of the LGBTI task force and its working groups has very much been around getting that that, I suppose, percolation that you were talking about through mainstream health services to ensure that whether it's at board level or at clinical service level, that there is an understanding and awareness and a responsiveness to the needs of the LGBTI community. So I definitely think that's something that's beginning to happen to a much greater extent than it has in the past.
So tell us, what's the role of your task force? What are you actually trying to achieve?
Well, we're members of the community working with the Department of Health about our community's needs,
yes,
and ways that we can feed into government to do useful and helpful stuff, like we've got a trans advisory group, we have a intersex advisory group, we're also working with experts trying to, you know, look at things that the government can assist the community in improving health outcomes overall.
Good summary.
Terry?
Well, yeah, but isn't it actually outcome that matters? I think that's what you were saying in the beginning, and I only know some parts of that broad rainbow community, but I know, for example, this, with regard to certain areas of substance use, gay men still have a problem of equal proportion to, if not greater proportion, than the rest of the community. So as well as engaging with the services, and I pushed you in that direction, I'm sorry, that was my fault, you know, isn't there something to do with engaging with the communities themselves too? Because some of the markers of poor health outcomes exist within those communities themselves.
I'll grab this one if I can, Rebecca, and get your comments as well. But I think the strength of the task force, and certainly of the working groups as well, is that it has representatives of the community itself on it with their own extensive networks, their own perspectives. And obviously my role as a member of the government on there is to ensure that there is that direct access to at a political level rather than just a bureaucratic level. So that messaging can be received loud and clear, and it certainly is. But I think the strength of it is definitely having members of the community themselves driving that conversation, driving the priorities as well.
And I'd also add on that the people we have are often working in these programs that you're talking about to look at how do we reduce alcohol and other drug issues and abuse and that sort of stuff. So they're providing direct feedback as to what has worked and what hasn't worked, which will help advise the government as well.
So you've told us who's started to tell us who's on the committee. Ruth's on the committee. You're on the committee, Rebecca. Who else have you got on the committee?
Oh, we've got, I probably have a full list I could just about read out to you if I can find it. We have, Dr. Ruth McNair, as you know, yes. Myself, Beng Ou, Rebecca.
Oh, yeah, Beng from the Paran Markets Clinic.
Yes.
Great GP, yes.
Jackie Tomlins, Peter Wapples-Crowe, who I think came on
recently,
late last year.
Yep.
Liam Leonard,
yep.
Simon Ruth, Brent Allen, Maria Pilotta Ciroli, Jeremy Wiggins, Damien Stevens and Michelle Lee.
Well, that's an incredibly diverse cross-section of people.
Absolutely.
You know, Liam Leonard heads up GLHV, was one of the things that came out of the very first Ministerial Advisory Committee in Gay and Lesbian Health back in 2002 and has been continuously funded and located at Trobe University. Maria, of course, brings in the perspective of the multicultural community.
That's right.
So it's great to have that. And Jeremy, of course, brings in the perspective of the trans communities. So it's a great cross-section of people. Okay, so we're back in the studio. We've got Gabrielle and Rebecca. So tell us what have been some of the outputs and some of the work that the committee has generated?
So one of the first things that happened was the release of the Rainbow Equality Guide. That was an inclusive practice guide for medical practitioners across all aspects of, you know, whether it be mental health, hospitals, GPs, etc.
Health and community services.
So that was a, you know, nice, because it did start work in the previous Ministerial Advisory Committee, but then it was not finished before the change of government, and we meant, you know, it was then brought across, reworked and released. And I worked on that, so I'm actually quite proud of it.
And so you should be.
So am I hearing a bit of bipartisan activity here. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, the project was run by the department and not by the government. So
I see.
The members of the Ministerial Advisory Committee worked on it, but it was a department-run project, so it could be taken across to this working group. So I know that there have been issues in the past about when governments change as to what can and cannot happen between the two LGBTI Ministerial Advisory Committees.
Well, sometimes things get shelved.
Yeah.
And they get shelved because different governments have different perspectives on things, and sometimes a whole lot of work gets done and it never sees the light of day. But it's great that this piece has.
It's had greater prominence probably under this government because it is such a pronounced priority for this government.
And obviously this government's spearheaded a whole range of initiatives, like having a commissioner for sexuality and gender, Rowena Allen, the Pride Centre, which was recently announced, which we as a studio will be a tenant of at some point in the near future, which
Fantastic.
We're really looking forward to. Great for me, round the corner from home. So what else have you done? What else has a committee achieved?
We have on Wednesday afternoon a peak practice body discussion about the Rainbow Equality Guide. So, and in July, August, we will have a hospitals forum to discuss inclusive practice and, also network with the hospitals and peak bodies about, these are the community groups, this is what we're doing, this is how we're going.
Meetings. So you're having meetings, are you?
Well, they're going to be forums more than meetings.
Okay, forums.
So
I think this goes to your point earlier about
percolating,
And the comment that made about, isn't that work sort of finished yet, is that even with the Rainbow Equality Guide, there is a need to make sure it's relevant and responsive moving forward, and that's a continuous piece of work. So I think these forums are an important part of ensuring that we're progressing and moving forward and improving, a process of constant improvement rather than, just sort of ticking the box on that and leaving it sit there until it gets to a point where it's no longer relevant. I think it's important that we continue that work on an ongoing basis.
Are you getting any pushback? I mean, if you look at that terrible campaign against the Safe Schools Coalition. We were talking to someone from the AMA this morning who have taken up marriage equality as their official position and no plebiscite as their official position. And see it as a health issue, that's true. But even then, when we were talking to Brad Frankham, he was telling us there's a certain percentage of their membership who aren't happy with the decision. Is the guide being well received, or are you getting any pushback?
I'm not aware of any pushback about the guide. It's an online guide, which means it is flexible and can be updated as needed. So as new community groups come and go, that can all be done. And I haven't heard that there has been pushback against it. But your friend from the AMA just said, there will be parts of the broader community that won't use it, won't refer to it. And at the same time, those medical practitioners probably don't have many LGBTI patients because they won't feel safe going there.
Mm. It's interesting that you focused on medical practitioners. Does it apply to other healthcare providers?
Yeah, nurses, mental health counsellors. It's very much about inclusive practice for whichever type of medical practice or allied health professionals want to work with the LGBTI community.
Mm. Cool.
That's right.
So what other things have you been doing?
I think there's also been work undertaken to see in terms of community health services how we can also develop and pilot other tools and resources that encourage and promote LGBTI-friendly services. So it's just not just sort of hospitals, it's into community health. You probably would have heard, hopefully, that we've embedded within the Statement of Priorities for Hospitals a focus on...
So Statement of Priorities are, in fact, the contract between the government and the health service.
That's right. And I think we've made it clear in those priorities that we expect that there is a focus or an aspect of their work that is to have inclusive practices in regards to the LGBTI communities. I expect that will be something that is a feature of... of those statement of priorities going forward, and certainly has been, and has been really well received, I think, from the community, because it sets a very strong tone and sends a strong message from government to our health providers that we expect that this is ingrained, inbuilt, embedded within health and community service delivery.
Now, it mightn't matter as much to you two guys as it does to Taz and me, but are you having much impact in the aged care domain? Yes, in the aged care domain.
No, Taz. Not yet, thanks.
Because, you know, that is a growing issue of concern in the LGBTI communities, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd agree. And look, aged care comes within that health and human services collection of activities that we'll be focused on. Probably something we'll have more to say on as work continues. It's certainly been identified as a key area of our focus.
And in fact, there's quite a lot of really good work in this space. The National LGBTI Health Alliance has a project to support aged care services with their practice and their policy work and some of the programs that they
do. It's one of those areas we get into that nasty gap, though, between Commonwealth-funded and state-funded programs. And while you can have great things happening in one domain, the other domain can be playing it differently. And there are practitioners who work across domains, but more importantly, there are individuals who fall between the two domains, who are in an acute hospital that's working according to the principles that are in the service contracts, you know what I mean? Then they go to a rehab service that isn't in the same domain. So it is one of those difficult areas of operation. I know that, but I don't think that difficulty should stop us doing something about
it. So one of the other things that I'm aware of is that your committee has recommended and the government has accepted the requirement for all health services to have rainbow accreditation. Mm-hmm. So what was the thinking behind that?
It was really about the rainbow tick accreditation is embedding in practice and policies and in general day-to-day interaction between staff as well as staff and patients, being aware of and working with the LGBTI community in positive ways. So it is something that several community health groups have already on their own gone, let's get that accreditation. We think it's going to be worthwhile. And so it's a positive for our communities. It's a positive for the organisations. And I think, recommending it means that more and more will just be going out and getting it.
Yeah, great. Mm.
And from the government point of view, I think it aligns very neatly and nicely with our priorities and also with the rainbow equality work that's been undertaken by government as well. So, why wouldn't you seek to promote an initiative that goes hand in glove with many of the priorities that we've identified and we've been pursuing as well.
Yep, and of course the rainbow tick did come out of the work that GLHV did.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
It's a bit like the initial investment has begun to blossom and develop a whole range of other activity, which
that's
is
right.
Great. So what can we expect next? What's the next one or two big things that we can expect from the committee?
I think there's a substantial work plan still, on our agenda, work that still has to be pursued over the next term of the working group and of the task force. There's some exciting things happening around the population health survey and some work being done by the working group around the inclusion of questions that go straight to issues of relevance to the LGBTI communities, and will also help us better gather data on those communities too, which of course we know is really important to our understanding.
So finally, the population health survey will ask the question, are you LGBT or I?
We are working on that at present, and the committee has had some really vigorous and vibrant input into the development of those questions, what they need to ask. We know it's not always as simple and straightforward as it sounds in theory to have the inclusion of those questions. So there's been a lot of brain power put into this with the those who design the population health survey to make sure that those questions can
Great. Well, come and let us know about that once you've got some data from that survey. Before we do let you go, though, I have to ask you, Margaret Cortarina, should the name be retained?
I'm not in favour of retaining the name. I think that people who, and this goes for anyone who dismiss in a hateful manner a large, you know, significant part of the population, I don't think we should be celebrating that.
That's right.
Gabriel? Look,
her comments were obviously incredibly disappointing is an understatement, I've got to say. To have figures that are revered for, in her case, her sporting prowess, then go and denigrate significant parts of our community, significant not just numerically, but significant in what they contribute to our broader community, is just disappointing. So, you know, I would say I don't know who makes these decisions. I must confess that. Personally, I find it really heartbreaking for many in our community that there's still a public discourse that puts them at the bottom of the pile, and that's not acceptable. And I think leaders in our community need to be standing up and saying just that. It's not acceptable.
And if you had a magic wand, what would you like it renamed as?
Ooh, that's hard.
That's very hard. That's
okay, well, let's leave it at that. Cool. Thank you for coming into the studio this morning. Great to have a conversation with you. We will... keep an eye on the work that you're doing, and I certainly, as somebody who works in the health space myself, I'm very interested in understanding what comes out of it.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.